The date was around 1989. Place was, country music radio. Those of you who know me may be surprised, but you have to recognize I grew up in Calgary. You can't really avoid country music growing up in Calgary. But Paul Overstreet, he released an album entitled Sowing Love. And one of the tracks is was Digging Another Well. Now, this is not a very popular song, but it did get radio play, and I remember it because it was on the radio in the late 80s, early 90s. And I am not a country music fan, but growing up in Calgary, you just hear these songs all over the place. And this particular song, I even remember it being played in church. And you'll figure out why, because I had completely forgotten about this song until I started researching for my sermon this week. And I want to read some of the lyrics from this song. Ike had a blessing from the Lord up above, gave him a beautiful woman to love, a place to live, some land to farm, two good legs and two good arms. The devil came sneaking around one night, decided he would do a little evil to Ike. Figuring he hit old Ike where it hurts, so he filled up all the wells with dirt. Ike went out to get his morning drink, got a dip full of dirt, and his heart did sink. He knew it was the devil, so he said with a grin, God blessed me once, he can do it again. So when the rains don't fall and the crops all fail and the cows ain't putting any milk in the pail, don't sit around waiting for a check in the mail. Just pick up your shovel and dig another well. Dig another well. Pick up your shovel and dig another well. Having your wells filled, that's a pretty nasty trick, isn't it? That's not something that anybody wants. Nobody, that's a really bad neighbor, isn't it? Filling in your wells. That's not the type of people you want in your neighborhood. But that's exactly where we left off last week in our account of Isaac. Isaac was asked to leave Gerar. And he did so willingly. And as he moved about 5 kilometers away to the valley of Gerar, the people began to take his wells and fill them. That was mighty neighborly of them, wasn't it? And we pick up this story in verse 17, but these wells that he had been using were dug actually by his father years and years before. And it says this, so Isaac moved away from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there, and Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. And he gave them the same names as his father had given them. And Isaac's servants dug in the valley, and they discovered a well of fresh water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen and said, "The water is ours." So he named the water Essek, because they had disputed with him. Then he dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also. So he named it Sitnah. Whenever you attempt anything worthwhile, it seems to me that there's always going to be those who say, well, that can't be done, or that shouldn't be done. They're the naysayers of the world. There will always be those who are in opposition, who oppose what you're trying to do. There will always be those who fight you. But that doesn't need to stop you from doing what you know God has called you to do. The question for us is, what do you do as people of faith when opposition comes? What do you do when the critics try to shut you down? What do you do when they try to detract and they try and stop you and thwart you and discredit what God wants you to do and what he wants to do through you? Now, we first see that Isaac, by faith, perseveres. Instead of fighting, Isaac was told to leave, so he willingly left. He moves on, and he reopens the wells that his father had dug. And you see, Isaac is trying to establish his presence in the land. He's claiming his father's wells by right of inheritance. And so he gives them the exact same names that his father gives them. And there he goes on, and the neighbors, they don't like that too much. He goes on and he digs another well. And literally, this well is a living well. In some scriptures, they call it a living well. It is an artesian well. It has fresh spring water. It's a good well. This isn't just the stuff that kind of seeps into the ground and, you know, is kind of brackish. It works. This is an artesian well. It's got spring. It's fresh. It's good. This is a good well. This is a really good well. It makes it very valuable. And it's incredibly important to find something like this in the midst of a drought, because they're in the middle of a famine, remember? They're in the middle of a famine. They're in the middle of a famine because of drought. Maybe there was drought because they kept filling in the wells. I don't know. Self-fulfilling? Self-fulfilling? Never mind. Leave that one alone. It didn't go over well with the Philistines, who seemed to want to simply just fill in wells and take them for themselves. And as we see, they begin to quarrel. Even though Abimelech, the king, gave them warnings to not touch Isaac, do not touch Rebekah, don't mess with this couple, they seem to have absolutely no issue with quarreling with their herdsmen and arguing with them and pushing them out. And with all of this conflict, Isaac names this beautiful artesian well Essek, which means contention or dispute. And then he decides, okay, you guys want that well? I'm going to go dig another well. So he digs another well. And this one he names Sitna, because the exact same thing happens. These guys come in and they start fighting over it and quarreling with him. And Sitna means strife or opposition. Now, the significance of these wells is really lost on so many of us today. In a world where you could just walk into a room and turn on a tap and get water, we just don't understand the importance of a well. We've got clean drinking water literally at the turn of a tap. But for them, this was not only a symbol of prosperity. Wells symbolize provision and sustenance and divine favor. They represent the spiritual and the material inheritance from previous generations. The fresh water or artesian well is a source of life. And it's seen that way as a source of life. Water is essential for life. And so it's seen as this is something of a blessing from the gods. But just as God blesses and sustains us as believers, these wells were symbolic of that in Isaac's life. So reclaiming and restoring the wells that his father had dug was his way of saying, look, this is where I'm setting up my roots. This is where I'm going to live. This is my land. These are my wells. But each of the wells that Isaac digs, they're a testimony that establishes a visible mark of God's faithfulness to Isaac. And when God is blessing you, you can be certain that there is a spiritual war going on around you. Because let's face it, Satan doesn't want you to be blessed by God. He doesn't like that. He's going to do everything he can to discourage you and distract you. That's what he loves to do. But instead of fighting, we see that he does the exact opposite with these people. He moved on from there and dug another well. And no one quarreled over it. And so he named it Rehoboth, saying, now the Lord has given us room and we will flourish in this land. The name of this well literally is, God has given us room. He's given us room. Isaac doesn't fight back. He just moves on and he digs another well until the Philistines finally give up and let him have his space and have his well and have his water. Now there are times when you need to stand up and you need to fight the battle. But there are also times when you just need to move on. The wisdom is knowing what to do in each case. By faith, Isaac perseveres. In many cases, when opposition comes, you just don't have to fight back. You don't have to get frustrated. Just pick up a shovel and dig another well. As that song said at the beginning, he gave him two good arms and two good legs. Well, I can dig another well. I can keep going. He blessed me once, he'll bless me again. Just pick up a shovel and go dig another well. Even when the resources are scarce, even when the critics oppose, even when the enemy tries to shut you down, by faith, just keep on going. By faith, persevere. By faith, dig another well, and God will make room for you. In Leipzig, Germany, way back in 1723, there was this little-known composer at this time. I'm sure all of you know who he is. His name is Johann Sebastian Bach. But he wasn't very famous at that point. And he became the choir master at St. Thomas Church. There, he faced much opposition. The town council actually despised him. They hated his music. They called it absurd. They even went so far as to call it demonic. Because they didn't like how he wrote things. They didn't like how he did things, how he composed. But musically speaking, his time in Leipzig was his absolutely best years. Now, it's my understanding that contemporary composers, if you can come up with one piece a year, like, you are, like, fantastic. You're doing amazing. Sometimes you only get one or two in your entire life. But during his time in Leipzig, Bach was actually writing a cantata every single week. On average, he wrote at least one cantata a week. Apparently, over 200 of those cantatas are still being played and used regularly. And so many of them are tied to biblical texts and events. But it wasn't until 1829 when the German composer Felix Mendelssohn, he arranged a performance of the Passion of St. Matthew, one of Bach's pieces. He arranged it and played it, and the people actually liked it. And well, the rest is history. When Isaac faced opposition, he dug another well. When Bach faced opposition, he wrote another composition or another cantata. There were people in the church who actually wanted to excommunicate Bach. They felt his music was so bad. When you are faced with opposition, what is it that God is asking you to do? I don't know what that thing is, but he's asking you to keep going, knowing that God will make a way for you. Do you feel the sting of criticism or rejection? Is the enemy trying to stop up your forward progress? Don't give up. Be faithful and persevere in the Lord. Go on, dig another well. However, there are times in our lives when we just don't want to persevere. You're too tired. You just want to give up. Anybody ever experienced that? Tell me I'm not the only one. Where you just don't have the strength. You're just so tired. You've dug so many wells. You're too tired. How can we persevere when we don't have enough energy? Well, that's when you need to stop for a while and remember God's promises. The Bible has so many promises that God has made, and when we know His word, we know those promises. It's far easier to recall what God has said and to rely upon His word and His commitment to you. Now, I need you to listen to this very carefully. God's commitment to you is far, far more important than your commitment to Him. I'll say that again. God's commitment to you is more important than your commitment to Him. And let me explain. Don't throw me out of the church quite yet. There's an important difference that we tend to wander. We tend to wander, He does not. God is consistent. He will never wander from you. That's why His commitment to you is so much more important. We do our best, but we still wander. But we need to remember that promise that He will never wander from us. He will always keep his promises to you, no matter what. And you can count on his resolve, even when your own resolve has shriveled up and you just don't feel it. You're lost. You're feeling alone. Know that he has not left you or let you go. You are still firmly in his grip, always. And in the heat of opposition, in drought, Isaac counts on God and his promises, and he relies upon God's commitment to him. From there, he went down to Beersheba. And that night, the Lord appears to him and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and will increase your numbers, or the numbers of your descendants, for the sake of my servant Abraham. And so Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. There he pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well. Isaac moves on to Beersheba. This is actually where his family had settled. When they returned from Egypt, remember the first time that Abraham went and said, hey, this is my sister? And the Egyptian Pharaoh kicked him out and said, get out of here. And he left and he settled in this area called Beersheba. And now Isaac returns to Beersheba. And he has encounter with God. And God is reminding Isaac of the promises that he made to him. The promises that started with his father Abraham and are now being promised to him. And as a result, Isaac worshiped the Lord. He pitched his tent and he digs another well. Only this time, it is a well of promise, not contention. And up until now, he had been digging these wells of contention and opposition with names like contention and strife. But now he digs a well, and that well reminds him of God's promise. And every time he drinks from that well or passes by it, Isaac will remember what God has said. Isaac, I will remember my commitment to you. I will help you. That is my commitment to you, Isaac. I will be there for you. And God is saying the exact same thing to each and every one of us today. I am with you. You. When opposition comes, do what Isaac did. Worship. Worship the Lord. Stay a while. Dig a well of promise. Remember all of the promises of God. Spend time in His Word and be reminded of how faithful God is. Stop to remember God's commitment to you so that you don't give up your commitment to Him. And just like Abraham, after meeting with God in this place, Isaac builds an altar and worships. He worshiped the Lord. It's the only altar that we know that Isaac ever built. Not counting the one that he did as a young man with his father. That was a whole different scenario. But this one Isaac built for the sake of worship, and he did it with his own hands without the help of his father. And he begins to do this. To illustrate obedient faith and grateful acknowledgement of God's presence and promises. And the language behind this carries the idea that he continued to worship God there. This wasn't a one-time event. This is where he would go to worship God. He would go there day by day to worship and to experience a close relationship with God. Now, I know that we don't tend to build altars today. But we should have some special place where we can meet with God. Yes, we can meet God anywhere. We can meet God while we're driving our car down Portage. We can meet him while we're sitting in a bus stop or in line at Walmart. We can have time with God there. But do you have a special place where you can go and meet God? It doesn't have to be some place that is fancy. One of my most favorite places to meet with God is my shower. I spend a lot of time in prayer while I shower. I pray for our congregation, our leaders, our deacons, our board, I pray for you. If I know that you are struggling, I'm praying for you. I begin my days in prayer for you. That's a special place for me. Anybody can come and look at my shower and go, "Whew, you could probably use a little bit of cleaning here." Right? Yeah, it's a shower. But that's my place. Where is yours? Where do you go to spend time? I mean, it's wonderful to come and to praise and to worship God here at the church. But how many of us are here more than once or twice a week? Not many of us are here almost every day. But each and every one of us should have some place where we can go daily. Do you have such a space? Do you take advantage of it daily? Let me tell you, God will keep his promises no matter the opposition. So when opposition comes, don't quit. Just remember the promises of God. Persevere. Experience the blessings of God. Enjoy the presence and peace of God in your life. So much that others will notice it too. And that's what happened to Isaac. As we continue to read. Meanwhile, Abimelech had come to him from Gerar with Ahuzzath, his personal advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his forces. And Isaac asked them, "Why have you come to me, since you were hostile to me and sent me away?" And they answered, "We saw clearly that the Lord was with you. So we said, there ought to be a sworn agreement between us and you. Let us make a treaty with you that you will do us no harm, just as we did not molest you, by always treating you well and sent you away in peace. And now you are blessed by the Lord." Are you guys familiar with this concept? If you win $60 million lottery, the lottery max or whatever, if you were to win that, how many friends do you have? How many new friends do you make? Ones you thought were not friends, well, they are suddenly wanting to be your friends again. And in this verse, the men of Gerar, they forced Isaac out of town. They filled up his wells. They pushed him away from everything. I mean, with friends like this, who needs enemies, right? But since they recognized that Isaac was being blessed, he was a blessed man. He obviously is blessed by God, and now we need to make nice with him. Because it seems like everywhere he goes, he can dig another well, and he can find water, and he can be blessed, and God is working in his life. We want a part of that. So let's make a treaty. Before, we were nice to you, weren't we? We sent you away in peace. We were being nice. We just don't want to go to war with you. We don't want to fight with you. We just want to be at peace with you so we can use your stuff and enjoy your wells and enjoy all that you have. You see, they couldn't stop God's blessing on Isaac's life as hard as they tried. And they finally began to realize, maybe we should just hop on board. Verse 30 says, Isaac then made a feast for them. And they ate and they drank. And early the next morning, the men swore an oath to each other. And then Isaac sent them on their way, and they left him in peace. That day, Isaac's servants came and told him about the well that they had dug. And they said, "We have found water." And he called it Sheba. And to this day, the name of that town has been Beersheba. Isaac has dug wells of opposition. Then he dug a well of promise. And now he digs a well of peace. You see, Isaac's opponents have recognized God's blessing on his life. And so they make a treaty with him. And they realize that they're not able to fight Isaac. Because they're not actually fighting Isaac, they're actually fighting God. And so they stop fighting and they leave him in peace. But you know what I love about this? Isaac doesn't just say, "Okay, let's make a treaty, let's sign and get out of here." He goes the extra mile. And says, "All right, folks, sit down. We're going to have a barbecue. We're having an entire feast. And you can not only come to this barbecue, but stay the night in my hospitality, and in the morning we will make that treaty." He doesn't make the treaty first. He feeds and blesses them with what God has blessed him with. Because he knows the promises of God. But the chapter ends this way. When Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and also Basemath, daughter of Elon the Hittite. They were a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Uh-oh. It's foreshadowing what is to come. Sometimes those Those fights are out of our control and out of your control because others are fighting with you. Some of you are trying to fight with God, aren't you? And you think you're fighting somebody else. Perhaps you're fighting a spouse or a child or a neighbor, but you're really not fighting with that person. You're having a fight with God. But God's plan in the situation, rather than trusting him to work it out, you are just want to fight with him. Or perhaps you can't explain the turmoil in your own life. You just know that you're angry and you're frustrated and you're not even sure what you're angry and frustrated at. Just life in general. But you're actually fighting with God rather than resting in his plan for you and worshiping him. But there's good news. Even when you're fighting God, he still loves you. Romans chapter 5 says this. But God demonstrated his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since we have now been justified by his blood, how much more shall we be saved from God's wrath through him? For if, when we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life? Stop fighting with God. Trust him with all of your life. And if you want to find peace, turn to God. Worship him. If you're so angry you can't even get the words of worship out of your mouth, have the worship surround you. Play worship songs. You may not be able to sing them with your own voice because you're so angry. But listen to those words of worship. Think about them. Chew on them. Meditate on them. And begin to worship God when you can. Enjoy the blessings that God has in store for you. But keep trusting in God. Now, I have no idea if Holly was going to do this or not. But our closing song, before you guys come up, I want to share the story of our closing song. I'm sure many of you have heard this story. This song is written by Horatio Spafford in 1873. 2 years before he wrote this song, his only son died unexpectedly. That same year, he lost almost everything financially because of the fire in Chicago. He had bought property and it just burned to the ground. It ruined him financially. And in 1873, the economic recession nearly wiped him out completely. And so Spafford decided to go with his wife and his four daughters. They were going to go to England. And the reason they wanted to go to England was to help D.L. Moody with his evangelistic crusade, his campaign that was happening there. He said, I'm not doing much here. I got to go over there. For reasons unknown, at the very last minute, he needed to stay to deal with some zoning problems or something like that as a result of that crazy Chicago fire. And so his wife and his four daughters, they went on ahead. Their ship sank, and all of his daughters were lost. Only his wife survived, and she sent this crushing telegram to him, which said, "Saved alone." And as soon as he could, he made his way. He made the trip to England alone to meet with his grieving wife. And as he steamed across the ocean, he penned the lyrics of this song. And I hope these lyrics are familiar. "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." But what we don't know about this song, and many of us don't, is that there are actually 6 verses to this song. Verses 4 and 5, almost no one knows because we just don't sing them for some reason. But I want to share those 2 verses with us this morning. "For me be it Christ." "Be it Christ hence to live. If Jordan above me shall roll, no pang shall be mine, for in death as in life thou hast whispered thy peace to my soul. But Lord, 'tis for thee, for thy coming we wait. The sky, not the grave, is our goal. O trump of the angel, O voice of the Lord, blessed hope, blessed rest of my soul. It is well with my soul. It is well. It is well with my soul." Will you come and lead us in this prayer?